कपिल जाना Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Vishnupad, Paramahamsa, Vibhaja, Akachaja, Asto, Tadasata, Sri Sriman, His Divine Grace, Abhaya, Charanaravinda, Bhakti, Vedanta, Goswami, Srila Prabhupada, Ki, Yantra, Srimad, Bhagavatam, Ki, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to Sri Guru and Sri Guru, all glories to Srila Prabhupada. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we're reading from the seventh canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. The title of the chapter is Prahlad, the Saintly Son of Hiranyakashipu. Is that correct? That's where the marker is. Yes, there we are. And it should be noted that this chapter, this section of the Bhagavatam, and this particular instructions of Prahlad Maharaj were some of Srila Prabhupada's favorite shlokas, and he spoke about them over and over and over and over and over again. He really was quite fond of speaking of Prahlad and of Dhruva Maharaj. He always appreciated how those young boys had become or were such exalted souls. And am I supposed to chant the verse again? Because apparently you've been reading this purport for a long time. So we'll just go on to the purport. What time does class end? We'll see what happens. The subject, or the part of this purport, this very long purport that I'm we're speaking from, is the subject of Archanam. It's the fifth in the list of the nine processes of devotional service. So we'll begin reading. Archanam. After Padasevanam comes the process of Archanam, worship of the deity. If one is interested in the process of Archanam, one must positively take shelter of a bona fide spiritual master and learn the process from him. There are many books for Archana, especially Narada Pancharatra. In this age, the Pancharatra system is particularly recommended for Archana, deity worship. There are two types of Archana, the Bhagavat system and the Panchatriki system. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, there is no recommendation of Pancharatriki worship because it is in this Kali Yuga, even without deity worship, everything can be perfectly performed simply through hearing, chanting, remembering, and worship of the lotus feet of the Lord. Now, there's a verse here from Srila Rupa Goswami, and I tried last night to figure it out, but I don't know the meter. So I could try to mutilate it if you want me to. But I'll just kind of read it as prose. Sri Vishnu Shravane Parikshit Abhavad Vayak Sakri Kirtane Praladha Smarane Tad Angri Bhajane Lakshmi Pritu Pujane Akroras Tvabhivandane Kapi Patir Dasye Tashake Arjuna Sarva Satma Nivedane Balir Abhut Krishna Patir Esham Param. Maharaj Parikshit attained salvation simply by hearing, and Sukadeva Goswami attained salvation simply by chanting. Prahlad Maharaj attained salvation by remembering the Lord. The goddess of fortune, Lakshmi Devi, attained perfection by worshiping the Lord's lotus feet. Prithu Maharaj attained salvation by worshiping the deity of the Lord. Akrura attained salvation by offering prayers. Hanuman by rendering service. Arjun by establishing friendship with the Lord. And Bali Maharaj by offering everything to the service of the Lord. All these great devotees serve the Lord according to a particular process. But every one of them attained salvation and became eligible to return home back to Godhead. This is explained in the Srimad Bhagavatam. It is therefore recommended that initiated devotees follow the principles of Narada Pancharatra by worshiping the deity in the temple, especially the household devotees. Well, I'm going to stop there for a minute. When I first started to read this section, I was remembering, because my initial involvement with Srila Prabhupada many times and with the Hare Krishna movement was with the deities. I was always, initially, I was very much engaged in deity seva. And I had some personal experiences with Srila Prabhupada in this regard, and I thought that it would be nice to kind of give you a look into the history of deity worship in the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. The Prabhupada mentions here in this purport, there's one sentence, that if you want to do deity worship, one must positively take shelter of a bona fide spiritual master and learn the process from him. And especially in the early days of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, and even now, without the shelter and without the guidance of a bona fide spiritual master in this regard, we don't really have any frame of reference. Even in the most, even in places where deity worship is still supposedly intact, we find very interesting permutations and changes in the influence or the emphasis of what's important in deity worship, why we do deity worship. I was in Chennai for about 4 weeks. I had surgery and I was there. And, you know, South India, I was in the temple, and I was giving class almost every day, every other day. So many people came to see me and talk to me and ask questions, and I had conversations with some of the devotees, and I came to realize that in some of the families of the people who were coming to the temple, their conception of what deity worship was all about, or what worship was all about in general, was very distorted. They were telling me how priests wouldn't use achman cups if the spoon handle of the achman cup, panchapatra, had a murti, some figure on it that wasn't their worshipable deity. So if it was Ganesh and they were fond of Hanuman, then they wouldn't use that spoon. And how rigid and calcified the rituals had become, with no depth, or little real understanding of what the ultimate goal of the whole thing was. It was more about karmakanda than anything else. And Srila Prabhupada really never gave us deity worship that way. It was an opportunity for us. Actually, first of all, we should consider how the deity came. The deity came to Krishna consciousness in several different ways. I'm sure I don't know them all. But several of the ways that I personally experienced are very interesting. Because somehow Krishna came to our movement without any special endeavor. It's not like Srila Prabhupada came with a suitcase of deities and went around giving them out to people when he opened temples. That's not what happened. So in San Francisco, you had the experience of one devotee, Mother Malati, Malati Prabhu, going into a Pier 1 imports and seeing a barrel of small figures that had on the bottom of them made in India. So at that time, anything that was made in India was interesting to the devotees, because Prabhupada was made in India. And as far as we knew, Bhagavad Gita was made in India. And Krishna was almost made in India. So anything was made in India was pretty cool. So she saw these figures made in India. They were, you know, this big, 2 inches, 1.5 inches high. And so she got one at a 5-finger discount. I don't know if you know the expression. Okay, so she got one at a 5-finger discount. She took that little figure, and she brought it back to the temple, and she put it on Prabhupada's desk, and Prabhupada offered obeisances. So that was pretty far out. What's this thing that was made in India, and you're offering obeisances to it? And so Prabhupada asked her, are there two other ones? This is one of them, but were there two other ones? And she said yes, and so she went back and got them at the same price. And so Prabhupada now had three little Jagannath, Baladev, and Subhadra murtis on his desk. And he instructed Shyamasundara to carve big ones, and he did. And so Jagannath graced the San Francisco temple. Before that, in New York, I heard not too long ago in Vrindavan, Brahmananda Prabhu, a story that hit home close to me, because in 1969, the end of 69, beginning of 70, my former husband and myself went to Toronto when we opened the temple there. And when we opened the temple there, among other ways that the deities came, there were many ways that the deities came, different deities, but one of the deities were little Radha and Krishna deities, about this big, 6 inches maybe. So we got a call one morning from the temple president in Montreal, and he said, you know, one Mataji has taken the deities, and she's taken their paraphernalia, and she's bringing them to New Vrindavan with the intention of giving them to her son as a birthday present. Head him off at the pass. So the deities got there with this Mataji, with this devotee, and they were headed off at the pass. They were taken, and we consulted with Srila Prabhupada, and Srila Prabhupada's response was it was Krishna's desire to come from Montreal to Toronto. So those deities are still there. They're still on the altar. We worship them now. It's almost 40, over 46 years. So, but then I was in Vrindavan just a couple of years ago, maybe not even a couple of years ago, and I was listening to Brahmananda Prabhu give class, and he was telling the story of how one man, one devotee, who was rather wealthy, he had joined at 26 Second Avenue, and one day he just kind of disappeared, and he came back a week later, or a week and a half later, and Brahmananda inquired from him, "Where you been?" And he said, "Well, I went to Vrindavan. I got on a plane, I bought myself a ticket, I went to Vrindavan." And so he went to Vrindavan. It was not, you know, if you know what Vrindavan was like in 1969, 1970, it wasn't like it is now. It was quiet, it was basically empty, a few shops in what we call Lowy Bazaar, but the whole road between where Krishna Balaram Temple is now and where Lowy Bazaar is, there was nothing. It was just fields, basically. And so this person flew to India. I don't remember his name, but he did mention it. He flew there, and he went to Lowy Bazaar, and he went to Mukutwala, and he bought two sets of six-inch deities, put them in his pocket. And he came back to New York, and when Brahmananda asked him where he'd been, he said he'd been to Lowy Bazaar, and he bought these deities, and he put them on the desk. So Brahmananda became very disturbed. He thought, what am I going to do with these deities? I don't know how to take care of these deities. This is Radha and Krishna. We don't know anything about Radha and Krishna. Prabhupada at the time was in Montreal. And so the man said he wanted one of the sets of deities, so he kept one set, and the other set Brahmananda packaged and sent to Montreal. And those deities Prabhupada used to show the devotees there, including Jamuna and Malati, who went from Montreal to London shortly thereafter, how to worship the deities, how to bathe them, etc., etc. And those deities are now in Toronto. So, you know, full circle how they came there. In the beginning, when I was in Buffalo, which was before I went to Toronto, Srila Prabhupada, we had Jagannath, Lord Jagannath, very similar to the ones here, same size pretty much. And I don't know where they came from, but they were there, and we worshiped them in a very interesting way. We used to take them off the altar once every 2 weeks on Ekadasi, bring them into the office, put them in a bowl from the kitchen, and put soapy water in the bowl and wash them very nicely. In soapy water, and then we would get a towel from the closet in the Brahmachari ashram. It was a clean towel, it was washed, and we would dry the deities, and then we put them back on the altar for the next 2 weeks when they would get bathed the second, you know, next time. So Prabhupada, at some point, he started to standardize the deity worship. There was one devotee named Shilavati Mataji, and she was an older woman, and Prabhupada kind of made her responsible for the deities. And so she was sending around instructions, and we were asked at one point to write all the things we were doing for worshiping the deities and sending them to her. So she was in LA, so we sent her our glorious deity worship. And we got a reply from Prabhupada. Prabhupada said, "Everything you're doing is very nice, only you should do it a little bit more often." So, maybe we started doing it every week then. I'm not sure. I don't remember exactly. But you can see the evolution, that it took some time to get here, right? With all the mantras and the mudras and the this's and the that's. Prabhupada never gave us any of that. Actually, when I was taking care of the deities, I wrote Srila Prabhupada, the letter is in the folio, and I asked Srila Prabhupada, because she had sent out all these mantras that I had heard about for putting the deities to sleep and waking the deities up and all these things. So I wrote Srila Prabhupada and I asked him if he could send me the mantras for putting the deities to sleep and waking them up. And Prabhupada wrote me back and he said, "In Sanskrit or in English, the purport is the same. Just say, 'Dear sir, kindly come and take your rest. Shut the light and chant Gayatri Mantra.'" So that was Prabhupada's mood. There were times in L.A. once he was sitting on the Vyasasana and the deities were open, and then the curtains closed, or the doors actually closed, and people were, but he could see on the side that people were going in after the offering had been made. He heard the bell, and then he saw people going in, and he was wondering what's going on, so he asked. And then he found out that they were bringing hot chapatis into the deities while the deities were eating lunch, because when Prabhupada ate lunch, we always brought him hot chapatis, right? So they thought, well, if Prabhupada likes hot chapatis, Krishna must like hot chapatis. So we were bringing hot chapatis, and Prabhupada said, no, after the offering is made, no one should go in anymore. And in Toronto, we had little deities, as I just told you, so we used to make little prasadam. Because, you know, how can Krishna handle this puri that's three times the size of him? It's So we were making little prasadam. We were making little samosas, little puris, little teeny cups of sabji. And when Prabhupada heard, he said, no, no, Krishna eats like a 16-year-old boy. So a lot of prasadam, right? Here in Chicago, not in this temple, in the other temple in Evanston, there was one little boy who went on the altar and tried to put the deities to sleep. He got on there when the deities were asleep in the afternoon, but it appeared to him that they weren't asleep because they were standing up, and people don't sleep when they're standing up. So he proceeded to lay them down. And he was about to try to lay down Kishore Kishori when he got caught. But he laid down the little deities, the Jagannath deities. So these are the kind of stories that let you know that deity worship it's evolved, right? It's evolved. And when I look, and I have been, I've talked about it a lot, even with the deity worship ministry, we've had discussions, that Prabhupada's emphasis was on having deity worship for us. And you notice here, he talks about in the temple and how grihasthas should worship the deity in the temple. And Prabhupada never encouraged us to have deities at home. Of course, when people started living far away, when we first started, for the first 7 years, if you lived outside the temple, you were pretty much blooped. So everybody lived in the temple, and everybody worshipped the deities in the temple. And Prabhupada didn't encourage people to have deities in their home, because he didn't want the energy of the temple worship to be dissipated by everybody having their own thing going on at their house. He wanted everybody's energy and focus to go towards the deities in the temple. And it was an opportunity for us. We didn't send anything to India to get stitched. We used to stitch everything ourselves. When Tirana, the deities of Radha Gopinath, and that's another story, Kirchhor Gopinath, I wrote Srila Prabhupada and I asked him if we could get deities, big deities. And he wrote me back and he said he was making an arrangement for two of my god sisters, Krishalya and Srimati, to go to different Indian people and then go to Jaipur, solicit donations, and then go to Jaipur and get deities for some of the temples. So they bought deities for three temples. They bought deities for Dallas, they bought deities for Detroit, and they bought deities for Toronto. And those deities were created and shipped, and we were waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting, and we didn't hear anything that the deities came. So I called my friend, Maiti Healy, and she was in Mumbai, and I said, Maiti, what's going on? Where are the deities? She said, I shipped them so long ago. I said, how did you ship them? She said, I sent them Air India cargo. So we called Air India cargo, and sure enough, there were seven huge crates sitting there, addressed to ISKCON, period. So they didn't know where to deliver them because they didn't have any further information. And so they just were sitting there. And so Jagadish and I from Toronto, we drove down to New York and we picked them up. And we met the devotees from Dallas and the devotees from Detroit in Buffalo before we crossed the border, because we didn't want to bring all of the deities across the border. So They were divided up in different ways. I chose first, and there was one crate that was just full of flutes and crowns and staffs and things like that. And then the other six crates had deities in them. And Kalachunji was one of them. I don't know if you know Kalachunji, but Kalachunji is a very large deity. And Kalachunji was found in a museum in Jaipur, holding open a door, or behind a door. And so he didn't have Srimati Radharani, and they commissioned a Radharani, or they bought a Radharani for him. But when we took the deities, later we found out that the Radharani for Dallas and the Radharani for Detroit had gotten switched. And so when Srimati, who had purchased them, saw, she said, oh, there's a wrong, you know, the deity's wrong, Radharani. But Prabhupada said, no, there's no wrong. Krishna, you know, he chooses who he wants to be, the Radharani, no mistakes. So even there, very interesting how Krishna came. And when Krishna came to Toronto, we didn't have anything, so except what came in that crate. So we made him a set of clothes every week. And for the first 7 weeks, Gopinath, Kirtra Gopinath, was dressed once a week. And then as we made a new set, he would get a new set, a new set, a new set, until 7 weeks were over. Then we had 7 outfits. Then he started getting changed every day. And I don't know how many of you have seen Kirtra Gopinath, but the temple, Prabhupada named the temple New Ramanreti, and he named the deity Kirtra Gopinath because I wrote him, oh, the deities are beautiful, Krishna has a little belly. And he said, well, Krishna has a belly because he's been stealing kheer. He said, and then he wrote and told us the story of Kirtra Gopinath and how Gopinath had stole the kheer for his devotees. So he said that Gopinath has been eating a lot of kheer, that's why he's called Kirtur. I'm going to name him Kirtur Gopinath, Gopinath that stole the kheer, and your temple will be called New Ramanreti. That's the Alachua temple, sorry. Their temple is New Ramuna, forgive me. So New Ramanreti is where we are in Alachua, but New Ramuna is the name of the Toronto temple, and Ramuna is the place where Gopinath hid the kheer under his cloth for Madhavendra Puri. So Prabhupada wanted us, and we did, and we still can, and we still do, have living relationships with the deities. The deity is a person, and we have loving exchanges with the deity. And there's many devotees who will tell you, and even in my experience, sometimes Radharani in Toronto, she has her hands like this. And many times she smacked me in the head when I got up and I did some stupid offense. I would run into her head, a hand, and I would get a bump on my head many times. So we have relationships with the deities, but at the same time, Prabhupada wanted us to be very cautious. And so he gave us rules. Now, we considered those rules to be very, very strict rules. But Srila Prabhupada, now we see that the rules that Prabhupada gave us were very simple in comparison to some of the rules that we could choose to follow if we wanted to. But Prabhupada didn't want us to become too absorbed in the rules and regulations or too constricted. He wanted it, you know, they have this thing in computer science, plug and play, where, you know, anybody can do it, any device, you just plug it into your USB and it works automatically. You don't have to install, download software and worry about it with so many things. It should be compatible with anything it can plug into. Deity worship in ISKCON was meant to be a means to an end, not an end in itself. He didn't want us to be home, all of us, worshiping the deity. He wanted us to be out preaching. And he wanted the deities to be in preaching, so that when people would come, they would see the deities and they'd see the beautiful decoration and they would just be amazed. And they would want to join the Hare Krishna movement because of it. In San Francisco, the deities were being offered candles and people would bring bags of carrots and Oreo cookies and all kinds of things. And even when we would offer our clothes to the deities. And they weren't necessarily saris either. We would offer whatever new clothes we got. If we got new jeans, we'd offer our new jeans to the deities. We would offer our neck beads, our japa beads, everything that we got, we would offer to the deity first and then take it back and use it. We would take the deities out in L.A. They'd take the little deities out on the street in a procession, and the people from the neighborhood were encouraged to offer something, a peach, an apple, a bag of carrots, something to offer to the deities. So Prabhupada was very much encouraging us to have a loving exchange with the deity as a person, and at the same time, understand that there were boundaries, that we would commit maryada, dharma maryada, or fences in behavior, if we didn't follow those rules. Don't get too intimate with the deity. And in one sense, very intimate. See the deity as a person, worship the deity. And even Prabhupada said, he wrote a letter, I can't remember to who, maybe Jadarani, I don't think so though. I just read it the other day. And Prabhupada was mentioning, in general, we worship according to certain laws, but then there's certain other things, like we make the deity's bath water warm, because we're thinking the deity will be comfortable if we offer him warm water for his bath. And so there's an element of concern. He also complimented one pujari who was ironing the cloth and the bathing towels in the morning, so that when the bathing towels were used to dry the deities, they would be warm. And that was comfortable for Krishna to have warm bathing towel when he was drying himself in the morning. So there was there were both these elements, the element of rules and regulations. There you will see later when we continue to read this that there's a whole list of offenses, many offenses to be avoided. And there were mantras to chant, and there were, you know, we eventually came to understand we shouldn't bathe Lord Jagannath with water. So Prabhupada, little by little, he gave us different stipulations, but always kept it so simple so that everybody could do the deity worship. And that meant that if I couldn't do it, I could just ask you to do it, and you could come and do it. You didn't have to study for 3 months and, you know, get a degree and yada, yada, yada. So it was plug and play in that sense, that maybe there was some book. Eventually we got some lists of things in paper form. But everybody was encouraged to participate, and everybody was encouraged to do something to worship the Lord and focus it in the temple. So if you wanted to do something beautiful, if you wanted to get something nice, if you saw jewelry that you thought was fantastic, then you would just offer it to the deity. You would buy it and offer it to the deity. And it was an opportunity to use your propensities. Many ladies, most of the deity seva at the beginning was done by women. And even in India, it was done by women. And they would, you know, it would give them the ability to offer beautiful things and make beautiful dresses and offer them to the Lord. We were making those dresses by ourselves. And they were wonderful. They were beautiful dresses. Now we hire some people to make them. It costs a fortune. It's costing more every year. I do it as a service for 3 different temples. And every year the price goes up. So now we're up to like $2,000 almost for backdrops and a dress. And it's, you know, lovingly made by Muslim sewers who put the thread in their mouth and handle everything with their feet. So, you know, but we had a certain kind of, my children were raised in the sewing room while I sewed for the deities with so many other ladies. Actually, when my son was 4, one sannyasi came by and gave him a silk dhoti. And my son was 4 years old. He came into the pujari room and he said, Mata, take this and put jewels on it and offer it to the deities. Because it was silk, he didn't usually wear silk. So the whole family, the whole energy focused around these deities, the deities in the temple. And that was what Prabhupada wanted. He wanted our heart, our soul, our energy to be focused. When we would make devotees, we would bring the devotees to them. We would pray to them to send us Sankirtan devotees. In LA, they still do that every morning. They pray, send us people to distribute Prabhupada's books and send people to come and help engage in your service. So it was a very loving, personal exchange. And at the same time, there were boundaries of respect. Prabhupada was very strict about punctuality, about cleanliness. He was very, very concerned that that the food, the prasadam, would be nicely prepared with proper ingredients. He gave us an order. He said, cleanliness, punctuality, nice prasadam, and doing something nice for Krishna. No, not something nice for Krishna meant like clothes, jewelry, flower, garlands, etc., etc. One thing Prabhupada did that was very interesting is that he used to keep flowers on the altar until they were spent. He wouldn't allow us to take them off the altar until Krishna had enjoyed them completely. And then after Krishna had enjoyed them completely, then they'd come off the altar and we could enjoy them. But Prabhupada kept them on there until they were pretty much finished. So Prabhupada encouraged us to let Krishna enjoy the things that we offered to him and to make sure that those things were offerable. He told us that the kitchen was as sacred as the altar. And we would go into the kitchen, we would offer obeisances in the same way as we would offer when we went on the altar. We had this, you know, the standards of clean cloth. But Prabhupada also, once I was in L.A., and there used to be, there isn't anymore, the temple room, first of all, wasn't where the temple room is now. It was where the fate exhibit is. There's a little alleyway that goes to that place. And on the side there, now it's the entrance to the restaurant. But there used to be a room there where people would cut up sometimes or roll chapatis, whatever. And one day Prabhupada walked by that room, and he didn't stop. He just walked by. And 2 minutes later, we got a message, right? He sent someone in, and he said, Prabhupada said that everybody who's in the kitchen and doesn't have neck beads on should get out. That they can't be in the kitchen doing any service without neck beads on. They should put neck beads on, one strand, and then they can go back in. So even Prabhupada just walking by, right, just apparently didn't stop, didn't look, he just walked by, but he saw. In Toronto, when they were offering arti, Prabhupada was in the temple. It was very crowded, you can imagine, Prabhupada was there. Temple room is very big in Toronto, it's an old church. And Prabhupada made the comment that the bell was too small. That the bell they were using for the arti was too small. After the arti, he said, you should get a bigger bell. That bell was too small. So, and once also Prabhupada saw that the light, there was a light, and I think this is the case with Jagannath here, all due respect. But they had these shining lights, these hot shining lights, and Prabhupada saw that it was in Krishna's eyes. And he said, that light isn't bothering Krishna. Krishna, it's in his eyes. You should move it. So Prabhupada had that relationship. He encouraged us to also have somewhat of that relationship, but to protect it with very strict rules of cleanliness, very strict rules of punctuality. 1 minute late, and anyone who's in Vrindavan knows Prabhupada's rasa with the bell, how he wanted the bell rung exactly at the right time, always, on the hour and on the half hour. And how much he fought with Dhananjaya and others to make sure that that would get done. And even today still, it's not quite done as good as it should be. But Prabhupada wanted it done on time. He wanted the deity worship done on time. He wanted the prasadam very nicely prepared. And he wanted us to have a respectful and affectionate attitude towards the Lord. He wanted the Lord dressed opulently. He didn't want the Lord to be dressed casually. In L.A., I'm not in London, some devotees went a little bit down the wrong path, and they started dressing Krishna like a Vrindavan cowherd boy with no jewelry and just a few flowers and short little clothes, little less clothing. Prabhupada didn't like it at all. He said, we worship Krishna as Lakshmi Narayan. And the reason we worship Krishna as Lakshmi Narayan is because if we get too familiar with Krishna before we're advanced enough to enter into that relationship, then we'll commit offenses. And we'll do things that are casual with the deity, and then we'll commit offenses. When Prabhupada installed the deities in Miami, Gaur Nithai, it wasn't Gaur Nithai, it was Radha and Krishna. He told the deities, you take care of each other, because they don't know what they're doing. I'm putting you them in your hand, their, you in their hands, but please, you take care of each other. Because there were, we didn't know very much, but Prabhupada wanted us to do deity worship, and he wanted us, it was very important for us. And here he says it's not so important, you can just, you know, hear and chant and everything will go all right. But also Prabhupada said that by worshiping the deity, it keeps us fixed, it keeps us punctual, right? There's no question of sleeping in. The morning the curtains open, it's Mangal Arati, you're supposed to be there. And the deity schedule all day lets us know. Prabhupada told us about a family in Jagannath Puri or Bhubaneswar, somewhere over there, where a woman, this older woman, she had her whole family living in a complex, and they had to go every day to worship the deity for the arati, and if they didn't come, they had to pay a fine of $10 or whatever, some rupees. Prabhupada said, we also will have a fine. You have to distribute one Krishna book if you don't come to the Mangal Arati. If you don't come to Mangal Arati, then one Krishna book you have to distribute. And many times he would go to the temple and not see people, and he'd ask, where is everybody? Why isn't everybody here? Why are you sleeping? Why aren't you here? So Prabhupada, you know, gave us this deity worship to keep us in line. Once he wrote me, he said, the deity worship and book distribution is like two tracks of a train. He said, you can't have one track without the other. Both tracks have to be there. And so one keeps us regulated, because otherwise we, you know, like with this festival, right? If we didn't have the regulation of our sadhana, then we could stay out there till 2 o'clock in the morning and, you know, be with all those crazy people making noise and trying to give them books. But how long could that go on before we wouldn't be able to function, right? So we have these boundaries that are set by the deity worship and the standards of cleanliness. We learn them because of the deity worship. The prasadam that we prepare, it has to be nice because we're worshiping it to the deities. So we have to use, Prabhupada came into kitchen sometime and would see poor quality food being offered, and he'd literally throw it across the room. So Prabhupada wanted a nice standard of worship for the Lord, and in so doing, it would keep us, it would train us up. We became trained up by worshiping the deity and by keeping a nice standard and by offering things to the deity. It gave us, you know, because we were dressing very simply, and you know, we you think you're dressing simply now. Well, when we first became devotees, we used to buy cloth by the bolt. Saffron, pink, and white, and yellow. And we would buy, it was a polyester cotton blend, looked like sheets. That's why everybody said we wore bed sheets, because it was like bed sheets, it was very heavy. And we would just cut it into pieces, 4 yards for the men, 5 yards for the women, and you know, so the women, everybody had a limited selection of cloth. If you were a brahmacharini, you wore pink. If you were a pujari, you wore white. So I was wearing white since like forever. And and the men, of course, they wore saffron. And the grihastas wore yellow and sometimes white. White had a very short life because it gets dirty so fast, and it was polyester, and it would have a border of dirt, like 6 inches on the, because on Sankirtan we'd go out in rain, sleet, or snow, and it would, you know, it would just get filthy. But that's what we wore. And we, you know, no Indian going buying fancy anything, dhotis with borders that are 6 inches wide that look like saris, and that didn't happen. We didn't have any of that. So we were just dressed very simply. So the deities gave us an opportunity to use that propensity to, you know, buy nice things and offer nice things and decorate the Lord very opulently. That gave us a way to see Krishna as a person and use the inherent desires in us in his service. And so this deity worship is a very, very important part of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. It's become somewhat more complicated, perhaps unnecessarily so, in many cases, In some places it may be necessary, maybe it's necessary because people are watching. I remember at the installation of Krishna and Balaram, they just had their 40th anniversary in Vrindavan. I was there at the installation. I was also there in the not installation in 1974, and then I was there in the installation in 1975. And there were guards. You know, they had hired these Brahmins to do all the puja. And if you look at the videos of Srila Prabhupada in that ceremony, he's completely deadpan. You know, people would put some things in his hand and chant some mantra, and then they'd say throw, and he'd throw, and he didn't smile. He was completely unparticipating, really, in that ceremony. And he told us that the real installation was the chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra, but that he had to do this because otherwise the people in Vrindavan wouldn't accept that Radhe Shyam and Krishna Balaram and Gaur Nithai were really there. So, but when the deities were installed, they were taken on, the little deities, the Vijaya Vigraha, were taken on Parikrama. And the morning that they went, I got to dress little Gaur Nithai. I got to dress little Gaur. There was rooms underneath. There are rooms underneath the deities where all the preparation work is done and everything is downstairs. So downstairs, they smuggled me in because I was a female, and they didn't allow females to do deity worship. So they smuggled me in, and they had guards. You know, on the parikrama, there's these little windows, so you can see inside if you really want to. And so they had guards patrolling there, so no one could spy and see that I was dressing the little deities. And so they were very conscious of what people thought, and, you know, Prabhupada was honoring that, reluctantly, but he was honoring that, what people thought. And in the West, also Prabhupada was concerned what people thought, and he wanted people to be overwhelmed by the beauty and the opulence of the deities, because in the West, we don't see anything like this. There's nothing like this, right? Where you walk in and you see tons of flowers and beautiful garlands and gorgeous deities. Most people don't even see the deities. They don't even get that there's deities there. They just see beautifulness, you know, a shine and beautifulness. They don't even really understand what's going on. And that was okay. Prabhupada said if they just say it's beautiful, then they immediately start making spiritual advancement. So he wanted the deities to preach. He wanted the deities to preach. So these are just some thoughts on the history of ISKCON, and there's so many stories I could tell you of the history of deity worship in ISKCON and the mistakes we've made and the rectification of those errors. But the overall overriding message that Srila Prabhupada gave us is that we're worshiping the deities to help us in our sadhana bhakti and to develop a loving connection with the deities. And at the same time, don't commit offenses. Be conscious of the regulations of mainly cleanliness and punctuality and offering nice prasadam. And be very cautious with the Lord. And he wanted the deities to be the focus of every temple, that everybody in the temple would be completely absorbed. I see that even in Alachua. Alachua has many temples. There are many devotees, very senior devotees, who have very, very elaborate deity worship in their house. But the center of everybody in the community is Radhe Shyam and Krishna Balaram. There's no question about it. And when there's a festival, you can't even get in the temple room because they get new clothes and they're just, the Sringar is just amazing, and everybody that gets involved with those deities puts so much heart into it that every time the curtains open, it's like, you know, because each pujari goes up there, and it's a different one every day, and each pujari, for each deity, there's 11 people involved every morning in dressing the Lord, and each one of those persons is trying to do better than everybody else. Not in a bad way, but like Chandravali and Radharani, you know, kind of like, I can do it better. Oh yeah, well, I'll show you. So people buy their own flowers and they decorate the deity in such a beautiful way. And every day when the curtains open, it's breathtaking. Here also, very beautiful, very breathtaking darshan. And everybody in the community should be inspired to come and see these deities every day and offer everything to them. We have one problem in Numaram and Reti and Alachua is that we don't have enough space to house the jewelry. And it keeps growing and we don't have enough room, so things get, you know, they're very squished because people always bring gifts for the deities all the time. Jewelry, 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 mostly jewelry, and we don't have anywhere to put it all. Such a problem, right? So that was the mood that Prabhupada inspired. He wanted us to do that. He didn't want us to be casual. He wanted us to be formal, but loving with the Lord. So I'll stop there, and if there's any question, then we have a few minutes we can talk. Someone's already looking for a mic over here.
Thank you. I was just thinking about a pastime that happened here. Somebody had a real strange mentality, and they wanted to relieve themselves of breaking the four regular principles. So they brought four things and they put them on the altar. They put a carton of Camel cigarettes, a dozen eggs, some lottery tickets, a Playboy magazine, and the person was really deranged, but he wanted to
offer his sinful activities.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. And then another thing happened that was one devotee, he's initiated now, but he really had a strong attachment for Kishore Kishori. So he went up there when the curtains were closed, and I came in when he was coming out, and I said, "What are you doing?" You know, and he says, "Well, I always wanted to embrace Kishore Kishore." So he guess he got away with it, you know, because I didn't tell anybody. And I know who it is, but I won't tell him. You know?
Okay.
But he got initiated though. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Anybody else? Yeah.
This is just a minor detail question, but I noticed we have pictures of Kishore Kishore back from Jitendra. Do you know how old that picture is? Where the picture?
So it's at least 30 years ago.
And I noticed that Radharani's hair is down. Mm-hmm. And I was just wondering, is that acceptable or?
Well, actually, I had an experience with Srila Prabhupada in the garden in L.A. when somebody asked that same question, but he asked a slightly different. He was sitting with Prabhupada, and it was one devotee who was making jewelry. He was making jewelry for the deities, and actually, he had come to talk to Prabhupada about his business, and Prabhupada told him not to make a business off the deities, that he could only sell it for the cost of the items that he needed to make it, and he should give it to the temples. He shouldn't sell anything to the deities. I wish they'd hear that in Lowy Bazaar. But anyway, then he had this argument. He was having this argument, should Radharani's hair show? And so he asked Srila Prabhupada, he said, "Prabhupada, isn't it true that a chaste woman's hair is never loose?" Prabhupada said, "Yes." And he said, "And isn't Radharani the most chaste woman?" And Prabhupada said, "Yes." And he said, "So then Radharani's hair should never show, right?" And Prabhupada said, "No." And then Prabhupada said, he went like this. He said, "Sometimes Radharani likes to wear her hair like this with flowers in it." So he made that motion. And then he said, anyway, he opened his eyes and he said, "Anyway, you should ask Srimati Radharani what she likes." But he didn't like, and he made comments many times about Krishna having long hair. He called it hippie hairs. And he didn't like Krishna to have hippie hairs, even in pictures, in paintings, he made comments. There's one picture in particular of Krishna laying on a rock with a kind of yellow on yellow striped dhoti, and he has this really long hair. And Prabhupada didn't like that picture. He didn't like the long hair. And in New York, he took darshan one morning and he went like this Govinda's hair should cut. He didn't like long hair on Krishna. And Radharani, generally, her hair should be braided, and it should be decorated with flowers or something. It should be decorated. So it's not that her hair is just, like, scattered. It should be nicely manicured. Because when Radharani went to see Krishna, or Lakshmi went to see Narayan, she would spend hours, and many maidservants would help her to adorn herself and adorn her hair. And Prabhupada liked crowns. He also liked shiny things, shiny jewelry, shiny. He didn't like clothes like you would wear. He didn't want that on the deities. He wanted something exceptionally beautiful. Another thing that Prabhupada was very strict about is that the deity should never be changed. And I had that particular experience with the eyes. I think I already told that story here, where Prabhupada yelled at me because I kept asking him if he wanted me to change Krishna Kalachandji's eyes. And he kept telling me, Krishna's eyes are fine just the way they are. But there's other stories too, many stories, where people even carved. There was Septarata was one devotee who was a marble carver. And when the deities came to New York, Radha Govinda, they had been already worshipped in a pandal in a program in India. So then they were brought from that pandal program to New York and installed on the altar there. But before they were installed, Septarata went and changed some of the things because the deities had clothes on and a crown. And you know, the style of ISKCON deities is that they're not adorned with those kind of things, so they can be dressed better. So the deities, when they came to New York, they had these things, and Septarata proceeded to try to remove some of them, and Prabhupada was livid. So, and he didn't want the deities changed, even if they were painted in one way and then painted again. He wanted them painted the same. He didn't want the deities changed. I know many times you look at deities a long time ago and you do them now, you can hardly recognize that they're the same deities. Prabhupada didn't like that. He didn't want the deities changed. So we have to be very careful that we don't just, you know, do what we like and change the way the deities look. Prabhupada was very strict about that. Anybody else? Yes, Alex? You have to have a mic.
Mary, if you can share some more stories of reciprocation that you've had with various deities.
That's kind of risky. I mean, I have reciprocation every day when I take care of Krishna and Balaram. I worship Shilas of Krishna and Balaram upstairs. So, yeah, every day I have some reciprocation pretty much. But, you know, these things are to be kept private. They're not to be announced, and they may be hallucinations for all I know. I may not have any qualification whatsoever for having any reciprocation with the Lord, but I try to do what would please the Lord in my service and please Srila Prabhupada according to his instructions. And the first 10 years or 8 years of my spiritual life, you ask Bibi Govinda Maharaj, she'll tell you, in Toronto, we used to get up at 2:30 in the morning, 2 o'clock in the morning. 2:30 in the morning, we'd meet in the kitchen, and we would take all the vases and polish them so they would shine, because Prabhupada said any brass that's on the altar should shine like gold. And so we would polish the brass every morning. We would polish all the silver and all the silver and all the brass. 2:30 in the morning, everything would be brought into the kitchen. We would leave it there at night, and then morning we would polish everything and redo all the vases. Not necessarily put in new flowers, but we would freshen them up and change the water because it would smell bad. And so every morning we would do that before Mangal Arati. And when the curtains opened, there would be fresh, shiny, to hardly be able to see, vases on the altar. And Bibi Govinda Maharaj was amongst the persons doing that, with me whipping him, he often says. But that was one of the best times, because everybody in the temple was so enthusiastic about doing that and behind it. So that was, it was a reciprocation with the deities in terms of the devotees having that loving exchange and everybody. And Kalachanji in Dallas was also like that. The students in Dallas would offer the deities things, like in Janmashtami, for instance. We would encourage all the children to make something for the deities, and we would offer everything to Kalachanji on Janmashtami day. So the deities would be decorated with little teeny necklaces made out of seed beads. I don't know if you know what seed beads are, those tiny little beads. So Kalachanji would have necklaces hanging off his fingers, hanging off his flute, hanging off his ears. The kids would just dress, and they would all be up there, that, I made that, I offered that, I made that, I made that. And Kalachanji, on the side of his altar, we used to have mirrors. So if you looked at the right angle, you'd see infinite Kalachanjis. You know, Kalachanji would just be one after the other, in the mirrors, in the reflections. And the kids would all run up to see all the Kalachanjis, all the deities down the sides of the altars. But it was very dynamic. The children were all totally into offering things to the deities and, you know, seeing what they offered, being offered. So there was a very nice reciprocation with this big Krishna and all those little children. So that was also very, very nice. But as far as my personal relationships with the deities, I can't really say that I have that privilege. Anybody else? Hare Krishna, thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. So I'm going to...